And because of your love of people, in 2011, you were honored as Ambassador of Atlantic Avenue by the Atlantic Avenue Local Development Corporation. And that's a very good title for you, Charlie, Ambassador of Atlantic Avenue.
I felt very good about that because most of my life has been devoted to Sahadis, but Sahadis as part of Atlantic Avenue. We never do anything that's only for us. We try to do things that are good for the street, because if the street does better, we will do better. And I know that. A lot of people are limited. They say, oh, they did an article on Oriental last week. Why didn't they do it on you? I said, an article for Oriental is an article for me. And an article for me is an article for Oriental. We are not islands by themselves. If people come to the street, they're going to see one store that they came for. And they're going to look, oh, there's a couple more. Let's go see what they have. You got to be open-minded. First of all, it's part of the makeup of the street. I consider them friends. I can go into their store anytime. They'll never tell me, Charlie, you shouldn't come in here. They can come to my store anytime. I have that same rapport with everybody on the street. I have nothing to hide, and neither do they. I don't care if they sell pistachios 10 cents less or 10 cents more than me. That's not my aim in life to go and check that out. If I'm out of something and I know Oriental has that, I say, please go across to the Oriental has that. I saw it there yesterday. That's the way you should do business. And if you lose that customer, then they weren't really your customer. You're trying to do the right thing. You're a friend first, you're a customer second. You hate losing your friends, so you go out of your way to make sure your friends are well taken care of in the store. It's my Charlie Sahadi philosophy. This is our 70th year on Atlantic Avenue, and I'm very proud of that. Most of the stores on the street were mom-and-pop stores. There were no big stores on Atlantic Avenue until 10 years ago. And maybe McDonald's was the first of the outsiders, but most of them, I mean, you had the Kirshys, you had Mike Carnivas across the street. There was little butcher shops, little grocery stores, and they were Arabic-American. They were American grocery with some Arabic flavor to them. When we got to the street, there was a store on the next block called Oriental Mercantile. That was between Clinton and Henry on my side of the street. It was owned by George Ayoub. And I loved his store because it was square. It wasn't long and thin. It was a square store. And the storage in the back was different. So I just loved the look of his store. He was a good guy. He sold stuff like us. He lived in Bay Ridge. And he and his brother, Albert, was called Abdu. George owned the store. Abdu worked for his brother. Then they had a fight. Abdu left. And he took on a guy named George. We call him George the Greek. And they opened Oriental Pastry. Oriental Pastry was opened by George the Greek and Abdu Ayoub. And Abdu Ayoub is one of these generous Syrians. You come in, try one of these, have one of these. They gave away lots of product, but I don't know if they ever made any money. Anyway, bottom line is the Mustafa family came in years later, Charlie and his three sons, and they bought the business from them. They've made a nice success out of themselves. Oriental Mercantile closed years later. George retired, and they closed. Then we had the Alwan brothers. We had Alwan on top of the Near East Bakery. Fouad Alwan made the best pastry. Mahmoud Alwan was in our store now, 189. He made Syrian ice cream and pastry. I always considered his ice cream the better one and the other guy's pastry the better one. Two brothers didn't talk to each other, which what else is new in this world? It was an interesting thing because it was all mom and papa stores. The blue laws were in effect, so you couldn't open on Sunday till George Malko, he was next door to us, for about 10 years, I think. And he and my dad never spoke. I don't know what the story was. So we never spoke either. And then he moved across the street next door to where Regina Nutt was. And he knocked the building down. He built a one-story building there. It was called Alamphone. It was an Arabic record store. And then 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there was a fire in the store. And I was afraid what the firemen were going to do inside the store. So myself and Georgie Akel, he and I went into the store. And we sat there till George Malko came. And we told him we couldn't leave the store alone because they had to rip the gate down. The store was going to be left wide open. We sat there for about an hour and a half before they found George Malko and he came to the store. And we shook hands. That's the first time I ever spoke with him, ever. And Georgie Akel, while we were there, he said, I'm hungry. So he took some pumpkin seeds. So when George came, I said, I want you to know this visit cost you a pound of pumpkin seeds. George couldn't wait till we left. So I think 178 was Regina. I think 180, that's where Barney's is. The right side of the store is where George Malko was. There was a guy across the street that sold the Arabic rugs, and it was a Palestinian man. I forgot his name. He was there for many years. He sold jewelry also. On the corner where the cleaner is now, that was Tripoli Restaurant. Used to be an Arabic restaurant. Then they had a fire, a suspicious fire, and they ended up moving. They moved into the building on the corner where they are now, which was owned by Ralph Attara, who owned Clinton House Furniture. So he sold them that building, and he opened his bigger building where Urban Outfitters was. That building was owned by the Attara family. So they sold the building. And now, of course, if you want to eat in Tripoli Restaurant, you got to eat in the basement, and a lot of people don't want to eat in the basement. You know, they own a lot of property in the downtown area, and they're much more interested in being landlords than they are in running a restaurant. I think maybe one of the two brothers died. There was two brothers that did this. And Mohammed, I think, spends a lot of time in Lebanon. So I think the situation there changed. And we don't really have a Middle Eastern restaurant downtown anymore. Technically, we have a new guy on the next block, Sultan something, I think. Tripoli on the corner, about six, seven doors. There's one there. And then you have Yemen Cafe. But I know everybody that comes over and says they go there. If you're a meat lover, evidently meat is their big thing. And they evidently do a nice job. But usually when I leave work, after I've been on the street for 14 hours, I want to eat somewhere else. I want to go to 3rd Avenue. I want to go 5th Avenue somewhere and eat away from where I work. Because near where I work, 7 people are going to stop me to talk to me. And you feel like you never left work. You're still on duty. And I didn't want to be on duty 24/7. They were long hours. You know, I would get there at 7:30 and I'd get home about 9 o'clock at night. They called it labor of love. Because I enjoyed what I did, I spent most of my day schmoozing and taking care of customers. Made a lot of people very happy. As my wife would say, yeah, then at 7 o'clock, you had to go up in the office and do 2 hours of paperwork that you didn't do during the day because you were too busy schmoozing. As they say, most bosses are not in their store, so you can't always get the feel for a store if you can't talk to the boss and see what his or her opinion on different things are. I was always accessible. Saturday was by far the busiest day of the week. People weren't working, and kids were off from school, so the parents didn't have to stay home with their kids, per se. At one point, we used to call it Greek-Egyptian Day, that we had so many Greeks and Egyptians shopping, more than our own Middle Eastern people. It was just an interesting time. You know, things change. We call 5th Avenue Mecca now. 5th Avenue from 69th Street to 86th Street. 3 or 4 stores on every block have Arabic writing on them. Most of the grocers there are halal. Most of them have meat beside the groceries. They have many more stores there than we have. You almost feel like you're in the Middle East. And if you didn't blink 3 times and see a Carvel or something next to it, you say, oh, wait, I'm back in America again. I mean, it's just very strong ethnic, and they evidently support each other very well. And I'm glad to see that. They buy from us wholesale. So what we've lost a little in retail, we've gained in the wholesale. They buy from us because we are the importers of a lot of the products. They're not really competing with us. We're 6 miles apart. They have their own people to compete with that are right next door to them. 2 women own this company. We like dealing with women companies too. They got to the point, we're not selling enough, they said. Okay, we had been increasing at a nice pace, but they wanted to go even faster. So they said, well, we got this other guy who wants to take the stuff. So my son-in-law said, you want him? Fine. 6 months later, he came back. I'm sorry, we made a mistake. We want to come back. He said, I'm sorry. You left us. We found somebody else. We're not going there anymore. You know, we worked with them. We brought them in. They came to the food show. We let them set up next to us. They didn't have to pay for their space and all. But, you know, you try to help as much as you can, but if you're not getting reciprocal help. So the point is, he told them at the beginning, you're going to be sorry because, you know, people promise you the world. You know, we were importers of grape leaves, the California grape leaves, Orlando brand. There was 4 distributors in the country. Now, we're the smallest of the 4 distributors, but we sold more to Orlando than any of them. And people would go to the manufacturer friend of ours, Alan Andrews, and say, oh, Saudi sells 15 or 18 containers. We'll sell 25. And Al said, I have 15 or 20 in the bag now. Why would I take a chance on your doing 25? How do I know you're going to do 25? He said, oh, I know. And 10 days after they get this stuff, I get my check. He said, why would I jeopardize my sales because you make a promise that you may not be able to keep? So we've been blessed. Most of our suppliers are loyal to us. If they have a problem, we discuss it. And if it's beneficial to them to go somewhere else, they do. And we go on to the next venture. We have a full line of Middle Eastern products. The tahini we have, the hummus we have, the Saudi canned goods we have, plus a complete line of products. I mean, we bring in from Lebanon, we probably bring in 20 containers a year, 25, 40-foot containers of assorted merchandise. And that's what we distribute. I mean, the store takes what we need, but they distribute to stores in approximately 36 states. I mean, when it comes to going to the West Coast from New York, the inland freight is too expensive. So there are importers like us on the West Coast. So, yeah, we brought this building here about 17 years ago. We have the roasting machine here. All the seeds that we sell, we roast here. All the pistachios we sell, we roast here. And they roast hazelnuts. We don't roast cashews because the type roaster we have, it's a vibrator. And cashews are very breakable, and they end up coming out of cashew pieces. So we have that done outside, oil roasted somewhere else. The stuff we do here is dry roasted. In 1990, we bought Regina Nut Products, which was some friends of ours that were suppliers, and they decided to retire, and they put the business up for sale, and they got creative financing. Nobody had any money to buy it. So they sent out a letter. They said, we're going to liquidate. So I called them up. I said, you can't liquidate. You're one of our bigger suppliers. So we negotiated and we bought the business in 1990. And we ran it as 2 separate businesses for 9-10 years. We were doing very nicely here. When the war was taking place in Lebanon between 75 and 90, we had some difficulty getting product in until they finally realized that without commerce, they didn't have the money to fight the war. So if they didn't sell, they didn't get paid. If they didn't get paid, how are you going to fight when you have no bullets, no guns, no anything else? So for a while, we were bringing from Latakia, Syria. And then Lebanon opened up again, so we went back to our Lebanese sources. Right now, several products we bring are from Syria. Now, you can't bring from Syria now. They're too busy trying to stay alive. And yet, without commerce, you have no money to live. It's atrocious what's happening in Syria right now.
Charlie, were there ever any business organizations in the area started by Syrians and Lebanese?
We belong to the Atlantic Avenue Merchants Association. We belong to the Local Development Corporation, meaning we support them in different ways when they have something going on. We have the Atlantic Anthem. You'd think as a group we could work together. It was always a challenge. The Atlantic Avenue Committee came over one day, and they said, "You're having a street fair in September." I said, "Excuse me? Don't come and tell me what we're having. Come and ask you, what do you think of this?" Anyway, he came. We went up to the Simon Club, Syrian Young Men's Association, next door to us on the second floor. We sat up in the club for an hour, and we're talking, and they have all these plans made up without us. This was in 72. We all sat there after he left and said, "Did you hear what he said? Arrogant people, we're not going to accept this crap." A month later, a different group from the same people came back. And they want to talk about it. What do you think about an anti? What do you think about this? What do you think? Yeah, you're including us in the conversation. So we got involved and we ended up, a bunch of us on Atlantic Avenue. And it started as a buzz and it became something. And the first anti was on a Saturday. And I'm going to take a guess. We drew 50,000 people. People said, "Oh, my God, my God." So they're planning the next antique now, usually the last Sunday in September, and they're discussing the date for the next antique. So the arrogant members of the Middle East, four of us went, they're just about to vote on the date. We said, "Why isn't this on a Sunday? Saturday is a shopping day. Sunday is a family day. We want this to be a family affair." And they thought about it, they thought about it. Good idea. Okay. This was in October, November, December of 73 now, because the first anthem had finished. For the next 9 months, we're saying, what if it doesn't work? We had 50,000 people there. They're going to blackball us. Well, we drew about 400,000, maybe more, maybe closer to 800,000. We didn't know what to do with the people. There were so many people. And it was just nice to see that they gave us a chance to put our input in there and that the input worked. Now, we wanted to have a band set up on our street, so Key Food had the widest space there, and they weren't using the front, so we put a stage in front of them. And we got Eddie Koshak to be our band leader. He was an entertainer all his life. So now we got to come up with $1,500 or something to pay for this band. We had to get the stage. You had to get the Wunga wagon from the city. And you had to get a sound system. It was probably $2,000. So the beggars, myself, Stan Rashid, Eddie Koshak, we go knock on doors. "Oh, here's $50, here's $25, here's $100. All right, we collect whatever we can. We come back, we have $800, $900. So we subsidized it. We did it for 5 years. And finally, the Local Development Corporation decided, you know, we want to sponsor the band. I said, "Oh, now we're talking." So they took it over. And Eddie Koshak performed out of the 43 antics. I'm going to say he performed in 39 of them. It was 2 years he was with Anthony Quinn, with Zorba the Greek, and he was traveling the country with Anthony Quinn. But the other ones, he was here. So I was so happy. We got him there last year. Even at 96, he got up and did his spiel, and I felt good about it. Stanley and his brother Raymond Rashid, when we used to have that pornographic movie on Court Street, on weekends they'd run Arabic movies. They would sell tickets ahead and you'd go and see the Arabic movies there. Yeah, they were very good at that. They had rights to certain films and they had rights to certain labels for records, and you know what a record is, yeah, Europe and videos. I'll tell you my favorite story. When 9/11 happened, my wife called from the warehouse. She said, airplane just hit the World Trade Center. Something's going on. Okay, so we put on the radio, TV, whatever we had, and we're watching this. Finally told everybody, we're going home. Everybody has to go home with somebody they love, sit home and watch television, see what's going on. This is not atmosphere for working. So we closed, and we went home. The next morning, I came down, and I've never been uncomfortable in my neighborhood at all. There were 7, 8 people lurking in front of the store. I never saw that before I came down. "Oh, Charlie Saad, how you doing? We came to give you a hug. We wanted you to know that we love you and your store for all these years, and this is not going to influence in any way, shape, or form what happened today." The next day, I had a meeting at Brooklyn Borough Hall, or 2 days later, I'm walking up on Court Street. A guy taps me on the shoulder. He says, "Charlie, can I give you a hug? I never met this man. I don't know who it is. Can I give you a hug?" Then a group from the School for Special Kids on Court Street, Mary Vidal, about 60 kids and about 3 or 4 teachers and some parents walk up to Sahadis singing love and peace songs. And every one of them made me a note or a card thanking me for being their neighbor. I was in tears, absolute tears. I've never been so emotional on my street in all the years I'm there. Now, 2 years later, Marty Markowitz was running for borough president, maybe for the second time. And they went to different people to interview them to see what people say about Brooklyn. I was blessed to be one of those. And I told the story about these kids coming up. I got calls from all over. They couldn't believe what a wonderful story it was, how people come together and sort of protect you and let you know that you belong. I mean, we weren't Johnny-come-latelys. We were here 45 years already. But just to show that after a horrific thing like this happens, people have compassion. It's such a wonderful, wonderful feeling. I can't tell you how good I felt just being in that situation. It was probably really the most emotional time of my life. I'm tearing up now thinking about it. We all came out of a mother. I don't understand the big distinction between this is better and this is bad. There's no better or worse. Some people are tall, some people are short. What has that got to do with anything? You know, people are looking for an argument. Then I really feel that it's important to embrace peace. Everybody's an equal. Give them a hug. Anyway, I have to say, I've never really received any negative things. You know, the worst four-letter word in the English language? Hate. With all the S's and F's and everything else you can think of, hate is the worst four-letter word. To really hate somebody? No, I dislike a lot of people. I don't hate anybody. I didn't hate Bin Laden, and that's a tough thing to say. But I didn't hate him because somewhere there was a human something in him that was that way. I mean, that's the way it is. It was either the late 60s, early 70s, I would think. The city, not only did they want to widen the street, they wanted to make it into a thoroughfare. Joe Shuda, our neighbor across the street, was very involved in that. Anyway, he fought for the rights to not do that. And I can say now, 50 years later, that I was always thankful to Joe for doing that. You don't know who's going to stand up for your rights. Another example, the city came to do water main in the 70s, I think. And I go to a meeting at Brooklyn Borough Hall, and they have a big table there, and they have all the blueprints for the street. So the guy said, you know, we're going to start this work in 2 weeks. And he comments. I said, yeah, what about the vaults? And he looks at me and says, what vaults? I said, the vaults you've been charging us $500 a year for because they're technically on our property. I said, now the last 2 years you didn't charge us for it. Does that mean they disappeared? I said, if you take that wall down, you're going to be over to my basement. There is a vault under the sidewalk that goes out right to the curb, right under the fire hydrant, right under the meter. So the guy said, I don't think so. I said, come with me. So I got one of the guys from DDC, Department of Design and Construction. I took him for a walk. I said, none of my neighbors are going to let him in the building unless I'm with him. So we go down to my basement first. We have a nice-sized vault. I mean, maybe it was a wine room where you stored your wine. I don't know. Our building was probably built in 1890, so God knows. I mean, it's 125 years old now. I took him to each of the stores on my side of the street. 4 out of 6 of them had vaults. And he looked and he said, oh, shit. I said, we make progress. My favorite 2 words, when somebody's mind wakes up, that's the first 2 words come out of their mind. So they had to address that. Now if they're going to open the wall, they had to cover you somehow inside because that might be open for 5, 6, 10 days. Rodents can get in. People can get in. 2-legged, 4-legged. Come on, guys, you got to protect us. But there's no vaults. For 20 years, we were paying $500 a year for the vault. I love the Alwan stores because they were both my friends. I could go in there and I'd get fed very nicely. I was a spoiled kid. Mahmoud would be making gravy and I'd be eating the dough as he's making it. He says, the raw dough is not healthy for you. I'm going to eat it anyway. I don't care. We had a lot of fun there. I happened to like a cook's companion. She was a wonderful person. Jennifer was there on our street, I think, for 20 years. She was very good. She left for family reasons. She's protected the building more than any tenant I've ever seen. Cost them a lot of money to fix it, but the value has gone up tremendously. But now I worry what's going to come. I like the makeup of the street the way it is. I don't like change. When the butcher next door to us opened, everybody said, oh, my God, who's going to buy $50 meat? Well, this is 5 years later. He's still selling $50 meat, so he must have found an audience, and he's doing well. So I'm happy that people find their niche, because if he does well, the overrun will come to us and vice versa. I mean, he's fortunate to be next to a store that's busy, so a lot of people see him. And he's got Damascus on the other side, which is another big draw. Damascus Bakery was owned by the Halaby family from 1936. Somewhere in the 80s or 70s, Tony Mahmoud became partner with Henry Halaby. And they ran Damascus Bakery. And later down the line, they split. The Mahfouds got the bakery, which is on Gold Street. The Halabis got the store on Atlantic Avenue. And that's how it splits. We don't have Damascus Bakery on the street. We have Damascus Bread and Pastry. So not the same store. Damascus, when Junior and Henry decided they didn't want to keep running the bakery, they rented the store out to their 2 managers who are running the store. And then immediately, they made it into a grocery store. Okay, that's fine. They wanted to be our competitors. I thought they should have expanded in the bakery line, made it a much more interesting store. Let's see, they opened in 36, so they're about 84 years on the street. They never changed anything. They modernized one time, but they really never added new products. These new guys came in, Tony and Gus. They spent more money in 1 week than the other guys spent in 20 years. They renovated the whole place. They put refrigerators. They have plenty of stuff we sell out there now, and they're doing very nicely. And I think they're going to get their lease renewed by the brothers, because the brothers, if they come back to take over the store, they'll have to work. They don't want to work. They can get paid for not working.
Is the bakery still on Gold Street?
Yes, and they opened in New Jersey, I think in Newark. They built a bigger plant there. I think one day they're just going to make co-ops and condos where they are. That's what's going on in Dumbo. But right now they're still producing in both places, as far as I know. Both my kids and my son-in-law, they're all finance majors. Ron, I thought, would like to work on Wall Street. So I said, Ron, get a job on Wall Street. You go, nice, nice, nicely dressed. You meet all these nice young ladies. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. He worked on Wall Street for 6 months or 4 months. He almost left the store. Christine fully started in 1985. Christine has over 30 years experience, and Ronnie probably has 20 now. You know, I wanted both of them to try something outside so they wouldn't feel that, oh my God, this is what I have to do. This is a business you have to have a passion for. I had a passion for it. I still have a passion. That's why I go in on Tuesdays. I love the people that come in. I had a connection with them. They're less connected with the actual customer than I was. But each person is different. It works for me. I hope for their sake that they have the same kind of thing. I was just the opposite with them that my dad was with me. I wanted them to be hands-on with everything. I wanted them to see every angle of the business while they were getting into it, so that they wouldn't say, oh my God, why didn't you tell me? I think it's a wonderful thing. They want to do something on their own. My daughter and my son, and my son-in-law, and this is a project for the three of them now. It's right here in Industry City. It's not far away. They know the dimensions. They know where it's going to be. And they have some creative ideas. There's going to be a place to eat, outside seating, and some inside. There'll be an open kitchen. You'll be able to see some stuff. I really can't give you much details because I don't have them. I want this to be theirs. If they have any questions, they know I'm there for them. I think they'll feel good about themselves that they didn't just continue something. They expanded it. Well, even the expansion of the store, the third store, that was Christine. She arranged the architect. She arranged the contractor. The other one before that, I did. But the third one, she did. I tell you, I was the boss for 50 years. The writing's on the wall. This way, they're putting their effort into something that's theirs, with the full support of their mother and father and their uncle. We're both out now. I go in Tuesday, he goes in Wednesday now, just to keep fingers in the pot. We have over 2,000 items. See, like in the new place, they're going to sell most of the stuff that they can import directly. And they're trying to bring in other, like olive oil, they're bringing some high-end olive oil from Lebanon. We have it at the store, but the millennials are different than the rest of us. And they're trying to appeal to them. So I'm glad that a younger group is working on that. Even for them, social media is late in their life, but still better now than waiting till you get to my age when you have no interest in it anymore. Busiest time for the year, September to January. Second busiest time is around the Easter Passover holidays. The summer would be our actually slowest season. If you want to count your big business where people buy bigger quantities and entertain more, it's more done in the cooler weather than the warmer weather. But thank God, business is pretty steady year-round. We have a group that comes in with a bus to the store all the time. It comes in with about 40 people on the bus. So I walk out to the bus, he gives me the microphone. I give him a 10-minute spiel on what's going on. And then I say, by the way, we have a hell of a halva inside. And they come into the halva counter. There's 25 of them waiting online to get halva while they're there. And they pick up some of the other stuff when they're there. But we have fun. You know, you get exposure. We have about four guys that do tours at the store on a semi-regular basis. One of the women that comes to us is Addie Tomei. That's Marissa Tomei's mother. She takes people on food tours. We've enjoyed having her. Her uncle and aunt shop with us also, so we know Marissa through them, but we don't know Marissa directly. We do have a website now. Okay, I'll go back now. 1951, we started a mail order business on Atlantic Avenue called The Silent Salesman. So The Silent Salesman was our catalog from 1951 to 1976. Audrey and I, when we came into work, we expanded the little book into a bigger book that would be easier to read in a bigger copy, and it was about the same postage, so we did that. And the problem was, we were trying to run a retail store and in the back of the store trying to do the orders. Well, of course, you're busy and there's a real customer outside with cash in their hand. You're going to take care of them first. We were always behind, sometimes 2, sometimes 3 weeks behind. Sometimes we go down on Sunday for 4 or 5 hours, myself and two others, and we do a bunch of orders. Many times we stay till 9 or 10 at night. It got to be ridiculous. So 1976, the Easter catalog, I sent out a thing saying, this is the last catalog we're going to do. Thank you for all your patronage over the years, but we are more focused on wholesale now rather than retail. This way we'll get product into your market possibly, and you can go shop at a store near you. We thought it was the normal way to do business. I got some of the nastiest letters in the world. You got our money now, you don't need us anymore. And I take everything to heart. And I was so upset. I wanted to talk to each of these people personally and let them know that's not the truth. But, you know, you learn to live with it. And then after 6 months or 4 months, it died down. And then we talked about it several times in between. No, 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 no. And then business was a little bit off and they wanted to increase it somewhere. So they went back into it. They very nicely run, did the website and got it set up. Christine makes a recipe for the kitchen today. Before it's in the deli, it's on social media. Everybody on our list knows about it before the actual piece comes out in the store. If you're not into social media today, you can't run a business anymore. I mean, and I understand that. My dad and my uncles lived in Bayonne years ago. No, I live 3 miles from here. We've been at St. Mary's Antiochian Orthodox Church, 2 blocks from my house, since it opened in 1951. I've been in Bayridge all my life, except for 6 years, from 1970 to 76. We bought a house in Staten Island because, truly, we couldn't afford a house in Bayridge in 76. And we moved back into this house that we're in now 42 years ago. And we're very happy that we did that. When we left, our church was here, our families were here, our business was here, our doctors were here. Everything we did was in Brooklyn. And because of that, it behooved us to come back to Brooklyn, and I'm very happy we're here. One last story. I got another story for you. I'm going to say it was 64 or 65. A buddy of mine and I were at the store doing mail orders on Sunday because we were way behind. And I was doing the Christmas window. It must have been November. And a police officer knocks on the window. I mean, the gates are down and closed, so nobody knows we're inside. But he saw us inside. I opened the gates. Can I help you? He said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm doing the windows and doing some orders. He said, you know you're not allowed in your store on Sunday. Again, the blue laws were in effect. You couldn't sell on Sunday. I said, we're not selling anything. So he said, well, not me. I'm not going to bother you. But if my sergeant or my lieutenant passes you later and sees you, he's going to give you a violation. You have to go to court to pay it. That's $100 or something. So honestly, I took it as a threat. Maybe I'm a nut. I said, he's going to go and get me a ticket for $100 now. So I took him. My buddy said, you want to open? So we opened. We opened on a Sunday. Shame on me. The hardest thing I had to do that day, my dad was in Long Island College Hospital, in the hospital. When the day was over, I had to go over and tell him what I did, because this was a no-no. And when he heard the story, he said, good for you. Oh, I felt so much better. I felt so much better. They never came back. Nothing happened. We did a good day's business. The good thing about it, usually you do a good day's business, oh my God, I should do this every Sunday, because look what we could do. No, just like the Atlantic Antic. We do open that one Sunday a year now, but that doesn't convince me that the other 51 Sundays we should open. I think family days are important. I give you another example. If you have a plumbing problem, it has to be fixed with big pipes or something. You can arrange for the plumber on Sunday for extra and not bother your customers. If you have to paint like they painted a few months ago, you can paint on one Sunday and the next Sunday and finish the job. You almost need the downtime so you can get things done. It usually breaks on the busiest day. Well, what goes down is the computer. When the computer goes down, you got a line of 14 people. Sorry, we can't take a credit card. What do you mean you can't take credit cards? I said, we ran this business for 50 years, only with cash and checks. Now, all of a sudden, without a credit card, we're nobodies? Because most people don't carry checks anymore. Well, some people still carry cash, thank God, but it's a dying breed, I have to tell you. I'm like a dinosaur. I still pay cash when I buy stuff, but come in and buy a cup of coffee for $2.50 and you want to charge. Oh, God. You used to put a sign up, $10 minimum. It's technically against the law. It's against the credit card company. They want you to charge everything because they get 3% of whatever you charge. I said, who do you think pays these charges? You didn't pay me any extra. I'm paying the extra three. So your $60 sale cost me $1.80 out of my pocket. So your $1.50 cup of coffee should be $1.75 or $2 to make up for all these people that want to pay a small credit card thing. People said, you missed your bar years. Well, I was never a bar person. So to this day, I've never had a beer. I shouldn't say that. We were in Germany. We walked into a beer garden to taste the beer. We both took one sip and we said, now we know why we don't drink beer. You want more strange? I've never had a cup of coffee in my life. I can't even say I tried it. My parents had a coffee pot on from 7 in the morning till 11 at night, 7 days a week. I never even tasted it, so I can't say I don't like it. We were on a river cruise to Paris 10 years ago. It was Easter Sunday that year. So the lady said, there's a light lunch inside. Why don't you go take a walk or something, come back with this. You look out the window, the Eiffel Tower is right there, 3/4 mile up the road. It was a nice day, it was a little damp and the ground was a little wet, so we went to the Eiffel Tower. Across the street, there was an Easter market. We even bought some stuff from the Easter market. Looked at the clock, it's 5 o'clock. We better start going back to the boat. I'm walking back to the boat. I slipped on the cobblestone, fractured 2 bones in my pelvis. I was worthless, absolutely worthless. I'm laying on the floor there, and somebody stopped to help me get up, and a guy pulls over on a 40-mile-an-hour highway. He gets out of the car and he says, can I help you? I was just showing you, your perception of people can be so far wrong. I said, no, the boat is right there. It was probably 4 blocks away. I said, we'll get there, thank you. It was the hardest 4 blocks I ever had to walk. I cursed myself for not taking that ride. The man was being so nice to me. Anyway, we were on the boat 2 days. They had a wheelchair on the boat, so I was able to get around. It's a barge. It's 150 people on it. And the lunchroom was downstairs. So four guys from the restaurant came, brought me down, brought me back up again. Bent over backwards. The next day, they were doing a walking tour. Of course, I'm not going to walk. So I told her, you go walk. They'll put me on the deck. By the time you come back, I'll have five people around me talking with me. She came back. I had six people around me talking with me. She said, you could talk to the wall. I said, yes, I could. There's been so many interesting things that have happened to me in my life. I'm blessed to be a people person in a people business. I always felt that way, and this type of business was made for me.